Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Wednesday, the 5th of October. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get to our topics for today. We also welcome your letters, of course, as we always do, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Shartok, who is already busy at work.
Busy as busy, busy.
Very nice to have you here, sir. Rosemary's back. Rosemary Armeo, director of the journalism program at the University at Albany, was traveling for a few days. Many people just figured we fired you.
Oh, God. You always get that, don't
we
you?
We don't,
yeah. You can never fire me.
No.
Who would want to?
That's so sweet.
Yeah, so they think it's some great conspiracy when you're not on.
Uh-huh.
It's very hard to explain.
Well, I've been voicing opinions to friends, people on trains, well, anybody will listen because I didn't have this outlet.
I think the conspiracy theory is that a bunch of male chauvinist pigs have put you into a... into a room somewhere and
silenced me.
Yeah.
Like Kim Kardashian, I rolled under the bed to get away from them.
And... I do have to laugh because if you become a Facebook friend of Rosemary's, there's no shortage of political opinion.
I love Kim Kardashian.
That story. You like that story?
That's a great story.
Rosemary posits the question on her Facebook feed of like, well, okay, many questions, but one, where was, so the security card was where?
Yeah. Like, and she's not going to fire him. And she's got $10 million worth of jewelry and she's in an unguarded room. This is not.
So do you think there's more to that story?
I think there's more to that story.
All right.
Oh, boy.
Communications specialist Teresa Bourgeois is with us again this week, and we are more than a little thrilled. Thank you very much for being with us.
And when she was on the first time, we got tons of letters about how great she is.
Well, we did, and we had her on Monday, too, and we were talking about the setup to the debate. And, of course, we had mentioned on Monday of Teresa's background with debates. And now we had the debate yesterday. The vice presidential debate that took place in Virginia was 90 minutes long. It was scrappy on both sides. And so I will begin with you. What did you think?
Well, I thought it was very strategic on both our parts, but in very different ways. And I think I heard Jake Tapper say that Pence won the night, but he was not sure that he won the week. And I think that that's probably true. I think that they both had different jobs, different things to accomplish, and they both did that. I think that, let's start with Pence. You know, he first of all, it was clear that he has a long history in radio and TV. You know, it came across very well. And I think that he was able to, you know, he has a different problem than Kane because he is not necessarily aligned with Trump both on policy, and he does not want to own a number of the statements that Trump has said. And so I think that he, in the short term, sounded, spoke to these issues, but not directly. But in doing so, he said a number of things that were not true. And I think although it might have sounded good last night, over time, over the next few days, you're going to hear quite a bit of fact-checking, and it already began soon after, that's going to be troubling for him. So I think that he came off well initially, but I think the fact-checking is going to be troubling for him. And I think that Kane really pushed him in that direction.
Was it just me or was it annoying to watch? With
it was
all the
horrible
bickering?
To watch.
Yeah.
I was on a plane when it came on, and a young man sitting next to me with a lot of tattoos and a beard helped me figure out how to get TV on my smartphone so I could watch it. And then I watched it again at home. I watched the reruns. And it,
Really?
I watched it twice.
I watched it twice.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so, because then you go back after you hear some of the commentary and look for it. And it... I can't imagine that anybody other than people like us who are just political junkies could stand it. It was, I was yelling at the screen. I thought all three of them were horrible. The woman, Elaine, I don't know how to say her last name.
I thought she was great.
I thought her questions were great.
Yes.
They were much better and much more on point on topics
but
than
lost
Lester
control.
Holt. Well, she totally lost control. She kept interrupting at the good parts and then not interrupting
have it both
when
ways,
they were
Rosemary.
Sniping.
No, I think you can. Because in that case, there were supposed to be 9 to 10 minute chunks, and what Lester Holt came under fire for was for letting them go too long.
Right.
This debate had the setup
that
allowed them to let them go, and when they would start to go at it and really start to discuss things, she kept on interrupting
them. She just
stopped.
It was really annoying. So that was part of it. Then Kane, I mean, he's a smart man. He came off like a little eager puppy. Isn't part of debate prep to look like you're not
so
prepped? And he was. Trevor Noah said it best. He said you're supposed to prepare, but you're not supposed to prepare your punchlines. It was like a neon sign
that
came out saying
so
this is a punchline.
That was so condescending, Rosemary.
I think Pence won. And he won just because he seemed reasonable while spouting the most outrageous stuff.
Yeah.
There's now this wonderful internet meme about here are all the things that Trump said that Pence said he didn't say. And it's just,
I think that's why he appeared initially. He presented himself well, but if you actually go back and assess what he said, he really struggled quite a bit with the truth. and there's, the fact checking is not on his side.
Right.
And so I think, yes, Kane did come off as more combative, but that was his job. He, that's what he needed
work.
To. But in the
didn't work.
But I think it will, over time, be a benefit to the ticket.
It's going
to
be forgotten by Sunday.
Rosemary,
we don't even
please
care.
Let the woman answer.
No, I'm interrupting everybody. Just call me Pence. He won a lot of points for that last night.
Okay,
so
can we just?
But I think the discussion over time, over the next few days, before the hurricane becomes the news, will be the things that Pence said about Trump that aren't true. And because of that, all of those things that Trump has said get relitigated. And that's not good for the Trump-Pence ticket.
I'd like to say a few things, if I may. One, Teresa, I don't think everybody knows what your background is like. But you worked for Hillary Clinton, did you not, at some point?
I worked in the campaign, in the 92 campaign in New Hampshire, and did her media.
You worked for Ted Kennedy, did you not?
I did. For 5 years, I was his spokesperson.
One last thing. You organized at least one presidential debate by yourself, didn't you?
I did. In 1988, in the Illinois primary, I proposed, designed, and ran the Illinois presidential town hall meeting, and it was a debate among the 5 Democratic candidates, and it was the one in that year that was a town hall format, not a reporter's
asking. And then
for
a long time, you ran a good deal of the PR and other things at RPI, did you not?
I did. I worked for the president of RPI, yes.
Quite a resume.
I've had a very interesting time, yes. I've been very lucky.
As for me, I thought Kane was terrific. There's a part of me that hoped he would be president of the United States, not because of anything ill befalling. But I fell in love with the guy. I thought he was terrific. I thought he handled himself extraordinarily well. And I would have said by no means did Pence win this debate. Joe, you were going to say?
I mean, the polls certainly indicate that Pence was the winner. Two amusing moments last night. One was the RNC. Congratulations for putting out the press release 2 hours early that that Pence was the clear winner of the debate before the debate had even taken place, and then he had won points on his issues of both the economy and fighting terrorism. I thought that was great. I do think the other thing that was funny on CNN last night was they had at the University of Virginia, they had, 48 undecided voters, and they had them in a room, they had them watch the debate and then decide who won, and they all said that Tim Kaine won, as they were coming out, I believe it was Anderson Cooper, or no, I guess it was Jake Tapper, who said, okay, well, that makes sense. All of these people are in Virginia, have voted for this guy, so I guess that makes sense, and sort of refuted their entire their stupid scientific experiment of like, yeah, okay, they're all Virginians, they know this guy.
Well, I thought he was great. I thought he was great. I thought his temperament was right.
I thought he was very annoying and very yappy.
Yeah, well,
I thought he was. He was aggressive, but that was his job, and also they had different jobs.
That.
And
I understand that.
Right.
Yeah.
In my view, he took one for the team, essentially.
Yes.
Because what he did was lay the groundwork for the coverage over the next couple of days. Because what made him yappy is he kept pushing back on Pence about what Pence was saying and trying to tie Pence to Trump's.
I don't think anybody said to him, go out and be yappy. They said, go and be aggressive and make the points. He was very ineffective in the beginning, especially. He came off as over-caffeinated, super eager. And, I mean, this whole thing about being loyal to the team and all that, I think that's completely lost on the public. So, I mean, these things function on several levels. You're talking about the coverage coming this week, but I think people turned off the debate. I think they still don't know who these people are, who the candidates are. And it doesn't matter what the vice president say anyway when you've got the main people arguing in just a few days.
Right.
That's
what I think.
Something
that didn't happen, which I think is interesting, and I think Pence avoided having his history litigated in this debate, in his record. Kane did it a little bit on the Social Security issue,
right,
where he has been a big advocate of privatizing Social Security. But Pence did get away with not having his, what is a very hard right, track
right,
record
right,
litigated in that discussion. And that's about the only place that it would be. And in terms of the larger picture, if Trump does get elected, because he doesn't have governing experience, and because he's not, a policy person, that makes Pence a much stronger, he'll have a much stronger role in the White House. And so it was all the more important that we understand what Pence's background and what his issues are.
Well,
and he says that Dick Cheney's his role model, and
well,
I
Richard
think
Nixon
think
maybe
his
role model with Eisenhower,
right,
because, he was chosen to be the sort of party regular, which he did, and he also was given major responsibilities.
One giant hole in the debate was any discussion at all about the role and the duties of the vice presidency.
Right.
I have no idea how either of those men would conduct themselves in that office.
The New York Times had Walter Mondale live tweeting about the debate.
I saw that.
And he just kept on saying, why aren't they asking him what they're going to do as vice president?
Right.
Why aren't they asking them what their role is going to be as vice president? Why haven't they talked about what the candidate wants their role to be as vice president?
It was a proxy fight between the presidential candidate.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And I think that's the topics were really driven by, by Trump's, because of Trump is such an unusual candidate, let's say that. And I think that really drove it in a way that it hasn't done before.
And in a sign of the apocalypse and the end of the world as we know it, this morning as I was driving in and listening to CNN's coverage of the debate, they had a segment about a rather lengthy segment about how while Mike Pence was the winner of the debate, if Trump does not win, it was clear that he was eyeing a race for the White House in 2020, and they had the a panel on to discuss the race. And I thought, oh my God, we're not even done with this one, and we're already moving on.
Well, CNN has got a lot to apologize for, including saying that Pence won the debate; he did not.
Well, it's not just CNN.
CNN. But my thought was, this is Trump's legacy. Even if he loses, we still have the stain. Had Pence been left alone in Indiana, he probably would not even have won re-election. The polls were all against him, and he's not well respected even in his home state. And now he's on a national stage, and he'll stay there.
So let's go to some letters, and then we'll go to the to the break at the bottom.
All right. Jones said, Kane won. Kane made sure that Pence's lies were not thrown under the rug. Yes, he was aggressive, but he was spirited to remind people of Hillary's capabilities. He made it clear Pence was not going to cover up Trump's lies. And that's from Joan. And then Lillian says, I forced myself to watch last night. It was like listening to my kids squabble. I was ready to send them to their rooms until they could talk without interrupting each other. That said, I think Kane did great. It also made very clear the divide between many Catholics. All three of you are Catholics. What did you make of that issue during that?
I thought the last question in the discussion on abortion was very good. I thought it was very effective, and I thought it also kind of put in a nutshell the fights within the church on that issue, and I thought they both were very articulate in their responses. I thought it was one of the best parts of the debate.
And I agree, and I thought that Cain's answer on the death penalty, the nuances, and the struggle that people in public service have to go through, and it also pointed where he is against the death penalty, but the majority of the people in his state were for it, and so he understood that he represents the majority of the people, and then had to abide by their will, and what an internal struggle that is, but it shows. That he understands the rule of law and he understands governing and he understands his role. But I thought he did a beautiful job. It really provided evidence of his character, I thought.
Can't believe in 2016 we're still arguing about abortion, too. In Poland right now, women are striking and refusing to do work at home to fight a proposed abortion ban. 2016.
Yes. Well, with that said, I do have to say that while watching it, there was that moment where you have that out-of-body experience of saying, why are we watching two men talk about the reproductive rights of a woman?
I don't even.
Although that's a profound
with.
Question, if you think about it, right?
I mean, yeah. Well, I know. I mean, it's just, but it does. You know, it comes down to wow. Okay. I'm sort of the.
Yes.
I am with Rosemary on that. Like, here we are in 2016. But anyway.
Right.
One more letters. Yes.
Okay. Jonathan writes, "Sacrifice fly." Yes. Mike Pence looked good catching the ball to get Tim Kaine quote out. Unfortunately for the Trump campaign, it was a sacrifice fly. Steven says, I thought the job of the vice president was not to die. Stacy says, hi, Roundtable. I like this letter a lot. Alan is correct. Tim Kaine was great. I only wish Kaine had mentioned Pence's position on gay rights. And that's from Stacy. And Lisa writes, Kaine won. I agree with Alan. I was in the car and listened on WMC and had to turn it off when Pence spoke. That's interesting. Yeah,
no wonder you think that Kaine won.
You didn't listen to him.
Yeah, but found Kaine much more compelling. Pence came across as arrogant and patronizing.
They both did. They both are kind of smirky.
I don't agree. I think Kaine, over time, will be proven to be the winner.
I don't disagree with that. But because okay, we have to go to a break. I was just told in my ear, shut up. We have to go to a break. So I will shut up and we'll go to a break and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois. And we welcome you and your comments this morning as we have been talking the last few minutes about the vice presidential debate that took place last night in the state of Virginia. Let's go to some letters on that. We'll continue and talk a little bit more about the debate, and then we'll move on to some other stuff.
Panel, says Leslie. I love your new addition to the panel. That's you, Teresa Bourgeois. I apologize for not having remembered her name. She's wonderful, and having her on with Rosemary is a bonus. See?
Thank you very much.
Yes to Rosemary, and everybody's dismissal as to the debates is basically meaningless to Trump, Hillary. So what about Syria? Global warming, Stephen Narrowsburg. Oh, I don't like to hear from Narrowsburg. You know why? Went to Boy Scout camp there. I think they were only half the county. 10-mile river. It's off the subject, isn't it?
But it's interesting that climate change did not come up last night.
Well, Kaine won. Disappointed that Elaine Guijano didn't press Pence on American strength. High roundtable. Kaine won, but he started out to be annoying. I think everybody agrees on that.
You know, in journalism, you're always taught to put the most important thing you have at the very top, the headline, the first paragraph, to grab people's attention. And that was a big mistake. Yes, he was nervous and all that. I think Kaine was so bad in the beginning, he turned off a lot of people. I don't think they watched beyond that first half hour or so.
Again, terrible. I think he had a job to do, and he was trying to, trying to hold Pence accountable for the things that Trump has been
saying. But in an ineffective way. I mean, he had had Kane had the stylistic kind of calm and strong presence that Pence did. I think he would have been much more effective as an attack dog. So,
all right. Morning all. Quick thought. I think Pence was all show, little to no substance. Kane's was not the best performance ever, but I agree. He did what he was told to do. Thanks for a great show. And that's from the Reverend Joanna. All right. Thomas says, debate. Read debate and Kane's aggressive approach. Not only challenging Pence about Trump, but also sucking up the airtime, driving the talk so Pence could barely get to C Foundation. What does that mean? C Foundation.
Clinton Foundation.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I was surprised he even tried to go to the Clinton Foundation given the Trump Foundation issues.
Yeah, right.
And
exactly.
And he misspoke. He didn't misspoke. He lied about the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
Because he said only 10% of the money is used.
Yeah, which is completely
not true. It's a lie. He lied about the Clinton Foundation. They get an A rating for the charity.
Well, here's one more thing I want to say on this. Kane acted like Trump. He was boorish, interruptive, yapping. He was like Trump at the beginning. And we have sat here around this table and criticized Trump. So how can you not criticize Kane for doing the same thing?
I agree with that.
Because I don't agree with it.
Yeah,
I think Kane was right and Trump is wrong.
Well, I think I don't agree
with that at all. I think that's
on content, but I think on style.
Absolutely.
We're not talking about a president. We're not electing a president only on style. We're electing a president and a vice president.
We elect presidents on style all the time.
I take great exception to both of you.
I think that Kane was trying to hold Pence accountable for the things that Trump has said.
Right.
In a way that, frankly, the media pundits, others have not, you know, been holding him accountable for the substance of what he said.
We've gotten several letters on that, Teresa. You're right.
I think that, and so that comes off as aggressive. But I think that he was trying to have a forcing function to force Pence. And Pence has tried to not own the substance of the things that Trump has said.
Yes,
he's aggressively worked to not own the things
that Trump has said.
And I think that Kane was working hard and kept reminding Pence and the public that Pence was not owning up to the things that Trump has said, whether it's the things he said on Mexicans or on a whole host of issues.
Well, I think that's accurate, but I needed to hear you say it before I saw it in the debate. So
Right. People
who are not going to listen to you are not going to have gotten that out of it, I'm afraid.
That's why I think over time
it'll emerge.
Right. That's why I
hopefully think before November, first week in November.
I got to get this one in because I like to get the other sides that are saying what I don't think. So,
no, you don't like to do that.
No, I do. Yeah. Tom says, Bernie, hello, panel. I had a very interesting call yesterday on WOMC. I was hosting the program, I remembered. He was a Bernie supporter who will be voting for Trump solely because he can't in good conscience vote for Hillary. That speaks volumes for how Hillary is viewed by many in this country. That's
well, Bernie Sanders will be in Maine today.
Telling people not to do that.
Mm-hmm. Telling people that how important it is to vote for the Clinton-Kane ticket.
Bill Clinton, meanwhile, has been stepping into it again and kind of insulted Bernie Sanders in a speech yesterday.
And Obamacare.
And Obamacare, too. And
Joe
had to walk it back.
You know, Joe says, the roundtable discussion is almost as painful as the debate itself. Can't wait until this is over so we can move on. That's what he says. Daniel says, Alan is right. Tim Kaine did what he needed to do, which is to build enthusiasm with a base. Rosemary notwithstanding, Pence got away with lying because he knew his base wouldn't care.
Right.
The panel needs to remember that precious few undecided voters were even watching. But those precious few may be the difference between winning and losing. That's right. The point here.
And also, what will the commentary be over the next few days in advance of Sunday night's town meeting debate? And, of course, because of this, the weather, you know, that may change a bit. But I think it really is laying the groundwork for Sunday night's town meeting.
And Doug, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
Doug said, Rosemary is right. Kane came off like Trump in the beginning, and it turned me off. And turn me off, the writer uses a capital T, turn me off. I find that interesting for emphasis. And that's from Doug in Woodstock.
Sometimes your autocorrect just does that, though. Don't know why.
Okay. And Kathy says, Pence drove me crazy, shaking his head when Kane used Trump's words, lying about the Clinton Foundation, and his repeated use of the phrase Clinton's weak and feckless governance. I was thinking all along, by the way, about the word feckless.
He used it several times.
Yeah, they used feckless a lot. They must have tested that one out.
Right. Well, and also...
And indisputable was the other one.
Indisputable.
Right.
And the other thing, too, is, you know, we were saying that Kane used some canned lines, but certainly Pence did, too, including There You Go Again.
Yes.
There were a couple
That difference was, again, stylistically, because you couldn't tell Pence was doing it so much as... Kane, who, like I said, could have had a red light flashing saying, here it comes, here it comes.
Well, he definitely, that's an interesting point, Joe. I mean, he definitely was trying to channel Ronald Reagan.
Absolutely.
And his mannerisms, Did anybody
else notice that, it may have just been the camera angle, but it did look like Pence was looking at Kane, but Kane was looking to his right other way.
I did notice that. I think you're absolutely right. I think Kane seemed to be looking at the audience where Pence seemed to be looking more at the moderator, which is where the camera was.
Interesting.
But I noticed
the ties. They did that flipping of the colors.
The flipping
again.
Of the blue and white.
Blue and red. They wore each other's party's color. And one more thing on Reagan. Did you notice yesterday that the Reagan family tweeted and said, please don't keep connecting us, Mr. Trump, to Reagan if Nancy would vote for Hillary. I thought that was really very hurtful for Trump.
All right. So let's see here. Mo writes, Dear Roundtable, first, I'm grateful for the current 90-minute Roundtable format. Good move. On the Trump legitimate tax evasion issue, I am so disappointed and disgusted that no major news outlet has laid this whole matter where it appropriately belongs in the lap of our self-serving Congress, the same body that provides for offshore taxes and for the wealthy. Can you say plutocracy, boys and girls? By the way, I think it's an unfair thing, Mo, because I know many times we have discussed that the Congress is the one who gave the ones because of the K Street boys and girls who gave the right for Trump to do this and say it wasn't illegal. But you're absolutely right about that. It deserved reexamination. Good morning, panel. Rosemary is absolutely correct in her comparison of Kane and Trump, and that's Jeff from New Paltz, who says, if you choose not to decide, you've still made a choice. Interesting. Samantha says, yay. So glad Rosemary is back on. Great show, as always. I think we have given Lisa hers before here. And, you know, folks, one to a customer here. Okay, Roz says, good morning all, though I agree it was hard to watch the debate revealed a depth and breadth of Tim Kaine, which has not been apparent to me until last night. Mm-hmm. He had always seemed a more benign figure. Hillary is lucky to have him supporting her. Pence was boring, and that's from Rosalind.
I think partially, and this is to a comment that Rosemary made, but for you as well, Teresa, because Rosemary was saying that, you know, the only people who are going to probably watch the debates are people like us who are interested in the political weeds and so forth. With that in mind, having seen Tim Kaine on the stump and watching C-SPAN and seeing him campaign relentlessly over the past several weeks, I guess that is partially where my thoughts came in, because I would have liked to see that guy on the stage last night. And as you say, I think rightfully so, Teresa, about him playing a role and doing the job that he was asked to do. But the guy who's on the stump is really good.
He's really, really good.
Yeah. I agree with that. But again, a debate gives you millions of people.
Right.
At
this
once.
Is your opportunity to see who you are.
And the audience absolutely are the undecideds. And those are exactly the ones who are going to be turned off. They would not have watched, I think. last night. I don't think it was effective for the Democrats.
Well, while I disagree with you profoundly, I do want to say, Rosemary, that if you were to watch, and we've had a couple of letters like this, the first, mm-hmm. 20 minutes of the debate, mm-hmm. And then turned off the television, then Pence won in people's minds. Mm-hmm. But if you watch the whole thing, I don't think there's any question that Cain came out as the winner.
But also, if Cain had not done what he did in the first 20 minutes,
yep.
it would not have unfolded the way it did.
You're right,
because he laid out the issues aggressively in the beginning that he was going to challenge him on,
yep.
and then he had to keep going back one after another and challenging him. So had he not done that, which was disquieting to a number of people,
mm-hmm. like
it
Rosemary.
Would not, Rosemary and others, mm-hmm. The commentary, a lot of people, I agree, that's mm-hmm. why I say, they were strategic in different ways and they had different approaches. Because they had different things they had to accomplish. But I think he needed to lay out some quick, fast points challenging Pence on Trump's record, whether it was on Mexicans or on Putin or on the foundation or on taxes. And he needed to push those out and, essentially almost ignoring what the moderator was saying. There was so much pivoting going on there in all directions, both mm-hmm. by Pence and by Cain.
What would you have done if you were the moderator, Teresa?
I don't know. I was thinking about that. Did she do a good job or not? Because, some can argue that she didn't because she, as somebody said last night in the commentary, she almost disappeared.
She did. Yeah.
But I think what was interesting
awful.
To me
good.
Was that they each were almost at their own separate debates.
Yes.
She had a whole agenda that she followed straight through, blinders on, kept going. And Pence had his, he was having his debate, blinders on, kept going, and Cain.
Would
kept
you have been stronger, would you say, now look, she tried, but would you have said stronger?
Sir, please.
Would you have said, yeah.
Oh, it's awful.
I,
no, it is. She had a little soft voice, and she didn't. She could have just said, gentlemen, we have a format that you've agreed to, and you are not. And no one can understand.
Well,
the one
I
time
think
she tried
she
was.
Do that. I think she tried.
Here's where I would have stepped in on the Syria question. I would have stepped in on the Syria question.
Wait a second. I asked you a question you're not answering.
Right. And because Pence gave this broad, we're going to be tough answer.
Yeah.
And I would have on that one said, well, exactly how? Because I think there are nuances to that they're getting away without answering. Are you going to have boots on the ground? Yes or no? Are you going to bomb? Well, who are you going to bomb? Governor
right.
Pence.
Right.
And how are you going to do that? And is that what the American people want? Because I think the situation in Aleppo and in Syria is tragic, but it's very complex. And here's where somebody like a president like Donald Trump doesn't understand the world. He doesn't understand diplomacy.
Right.
He doesn't understand power. He doesn't understand the use of military. And yet he has all this bluster.
It's simple. It's simple. We just go in there and take care of it. We're strong.
And the bluster yep. is dangerous even through the electoral process. I think it puts us in danger. I can imagine when he's governing, and she should have held him accountable to what he said about Syria and the Middle East.
Okay, so one last question to both of you and to all three of you.
No, I have to take a break. Yes.
Okay, and that is, how much damage, assuming you were right, which you were not, that Pence won the debate. How much damage does that do to Hillary's chances?
None. I think we said that.
None.
It
because I would say that debate last night changed none of the minds of the decided people. You're not going to switch from Hillary.
Well, undecideds are very important.
And the undecideds, I don't think, paid any attention to it because of all the things we've been talking about.
Do you agree with that, Teresa?
Well, what I'm interested in, how Trump's going to react to this, because his vice president really, in a way, did not defend him. He defended him broadly. And I tweeted, are we going to get a 3 a.m. tweet storm of Trump?
Know.
Against his own guy. Because
but there was one from Trump, which he said that Cain looked like a bad guy in the Batman
yes.
films.
Yeah, right. He was tweeting during the debate. Yeah,
is that
he
presidential?
Like that.
Is it a? It's just not presidential. His behavior is not presidential. But
and
the
we're talking about. Wait, though, we're talking about an electorate that doesn't want presidential. They
no.
don't want everything we've seen in a president before.
Okay,
that's not a negative.
We're about to turn into a pumpkin if I don't go to a break, and then we. Don't get our underwriting in. So we're going to take a break.
It is Halloween.
We'll do the underwriting, and then we'll be right back and continue the conversation right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Berkshire String Instrument School of Lutery at Sauvé Guitars, Windsor Mill, North Adams, Massachusetts. Working to guide students through hand-building guitars, mandolins, and ukuleles, berkshirestringinstruments.com for class registration. Shedman, building and delivering backyard storage sheds and gazebos throughout the WAMC listening area, in-stock inventory in New Lebanon and Brunswick, New York, shedman.com. Chance Galleries, Stockbridge, featuring the works of over 50 internationally known artists working in glass, including Dale Chihuly, chancegalleries.com. And Hudson Beach Glass, Beacon, a contemporary glass and jewelry gallery, plus a hand-blown glass studio and fine art upstairs, hudsonbeachglass.com.
All right, welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, and nice to have you with us. Let's get to some other things.
Can I say one last thing?
Absolutely.
No. Thank you. As a professor, I have some homework. Time Magazine has an article, which I think is frightening and incredibly interesting, about Robert Mercer and his daughter, the hedge fund, incredibly rich guy who totally is supporting Trump, who has put money first into Cruz and now has moved it over to Trump. Kellyanne Conway worked for him, the Bannon from Breitbart, which is one of his funded projects, have worked for him. He's in control of this, and it is amazing the agenda that he is pushing. So Time Magazine took a look at that. We've seen this kind of examination of the Koch brothers, but not of Mercer before.
And I'd like to also, on the policy side, there was one question at the end of this debate that I thought was very interesting. And I think we all, it's the issue of, we're now a very divided country, and this has been a very divisive election, and how do you bring people together?
Yeah.
And this is the policy wonk side of me, and I'm sure it's going to get lost in the debate, but I think that really is a fundamental question that this country's going to have to grapple with, is this has been so divisive, and it you have a large group of very disaffected voters, and it's going to be a very challenging task to knit that back together.
Especially if we wonder about what's going to happen to the Congress.
Right.
In other words, if the Congress stays Republican, Kelly Ayotte?
Ayotte.
She got herself
situation
into
yesterday. Oh, yeah. My God.
Talk about feckless.
So talk about, what could, Joe, when you have that magic machine of yours, could you give us a direct definition of feckless?
Of course I can. Yes. So just for those of you, she said yesterday that, or she said during the debate, her debate, that she felt that Donald Trump was a role model. And
for her children.
For her children, and then she quickly walked that back.
So does walking it back count? The reason I say that is that because Rosemary, on at least one occasion or more, has said, oh, don't worry about somebody having made that mistake because they walked it back. Now, I think once your true feelings come out with the original idea, that walking it back doesn't really help that much.
Well, I think that I might have said that before Donald Trump.
Oh, I see.
Doesn't walk back. And so it's very, it's such a contrast when someone does say, wait, you know, this is a heated debate and I spoke too fast and that's not what I really meant. Let me try that again. And we do that on the radio even. So I sort of am sympathetic to that.
Yeah. But I don't think it was a misstatement in the heated debate. I think when you...
What are we talking about?
With
Kelly.
Right. Because In answering it the first time, she appeared to really be struggling with her answer.
Yes.
And she chose the political answer and not the answer in her heart. And it almost appeared to be the case. And then she went off the stage and she had that deer in the headlights in the debate. And then ultimately she understood that, you know, it just was not a legitimate answer.
But surely she was, Teresa, she was going to get asked that question.
Why she wasn't prepared for it, I mean, is amazing. I think this broader issue about what happens to the House and the Senate is a really important one.
Sure.
And Senator Warren, Elizabeth Warren, is being, you know, very aggressive about going around the country and helping key Senate candidates. Because if Secretary Clinton wins, it's not only important that she wins, but that there are she has a House and Senate that she can work with.
You bet.
The polls don't look like they're going that way, though.
The Republicans have gotten back much stronger than they were,
yeah. And tons of money that might have gone to Trump instead are going into Senate and House races. And the effect of that, I think we're going to end up the way we are.
But I think if Senator Sanders and Senator Warren and some others, can really help in this regard for Democrats to build a much stronger base.
I thought, just going back for a couple of days, but I thought when the audio tape was released of Secretary Clinton talking about Bernie supporters and being in their basements and their parents' basements and so forth. I thought that Bernie Sanders' handling of that saying that they're absolutely
he
right.
She agreed with it. Yeah.
I thought, wow, you know, he has turned out to be a wonderful surrogate for her and defended her and defended himself on all of the Sunday shows. And I thought just did a really admirable job of pulling everything together.
The problem is it could have been bad. I see the problem is that I don't see Warren or Sanders having any effect at all in the races that will determine how the Senate or the House goes. They're progressives. They are not liked in the places where we have these big races.
Yeah. As a political scientist, sorry about that. No. Let me just say it's all about turnout.
Right.
So what's important here is that when either of those people go in, the question is, will people turn out and vote for Clinton? And that, it seems to me, is where both of them can really make a difference.
But we were talking about the down ticket races.
Yes,
right,
that's what I'm saying.
But if those two are out there
mm-hmm. and they are saying, okay, you Democrats, remember what this is all about and how important it is that you go out and vote.
Okay.
If they go out and vote for Hillary, they'll be there for the other guys.
Right.
So remember that.
In our remaining 20 seconds, feckless, adjective, lacking initiative or strength of character, irresponsible, a feckless mama's boy being an example.
Oh.
Wow.
All right. So that was your...
Another sexist reference in a way.
Synonyms, useless, worthless, incompetent, inept, good for nothing.
Well, I'm glad that's what it means because I thought it had something to do with the excretory function.
We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Teresa Bourgeois, and I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Ray Graff just reported on this story during our newscast. The man who has admitted orchestrating the mysterious lane closings at the George Washington Bridge in 2013 testified on Tuesday that he was told that Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey and Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York had agreed to falsely explain the closings as part of a traffic study to try to, quote, put an end to a growing scandal surrounding them. The confessed culprit, David Wildstein, testified that he had heard from two top Christie appointees, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which operates the bridge, that the governors had hoped to stop the catastrophic traffic jams caused by the lane closings from hurting Mr. Christie's reelection campaign.
Oh, I'd like to just go first.
Please. Here.
You know, I am not a huge fan of Andrew Cuomo. I mean, I think we all know that. However, I don't think this is fair.
Oh, that's interesting.
No,
I don't think this is fair.
In other words, this is really hearsay. And I can give you a dozen ways in which this worked out. So one says it to the other says it back to one, and pretty soon this is established fact that Cuomo is in on the game. If they had somebody who they could say, I talked to the governor, or I heard the governor talk to the other governor, or I did that, I think they might have something. Now, does it help Andrew Cuomo? It hurts him, because he's in a lot of trouble right now on a lot of other things. And this is going to hurt him. But in this case, I don't think it's fair.
What is the motivation for Andrew Cuomo, if the story is true, to assist the Republican governor in his re-election?
The answer is we'll never know. Andrew Cuomo was elected as a Republican. We know that. He wanted to be a sort of conservative Clintonian Democrat as when he came in. And he was pictured being across the river, across the board, and who knows what other things these two guys had going. But they had to run the Port Authority together. And in the Port Authority, it's very political. They trade favors. And I think we'll never know. But if it is true, it will be, you know, it would be extraordinary that anybody could lay hands on this governor, who is known to never get himself into this kind of trouble. He has surrogates do his work for him.
Well, they haven't even gotten the governor in New Jersey involved directly. He's not facing a criminal prosecution.
He is involved, because now it's come out from Wallenstein and others that that he knew real time as this was going on.
Why do you think that is not secondhand information, yet the stuff on Cuomo is?
Because you have all of these people saying that he did know. All the people who talked to him testifying that he knew. That's why.
That they witnessed a conversation,
if I remember correctly, at the
9/11
right.
memorial.
Well, what would it take to rise the critique, the complaint about Cuomo?
Somebody would have to prove it. In other words, Cuomo, wait a second. Cuomo came out and he said, it never happened. I never said any such conversation. I always love it when somebody says any such conversation, because you mean other kind of conversations, but not a such conversation is possible. But no, I think Cuomo is in the clear on this, unless somebody can prove that something else happened.
I don't know. I mean, that would take Cuomo, or it would take Cuomo. It would take Christie. Would be the only one who could actually prove it.
Well, or somebody who was in the room when the conversation was going on, for example. Yes.
Yeah, that happened that way. It was probably over the phone.
Yeah, but you know, when Cuomo makes telephone calls, he often has other people around.
Isn't this one of those stories, though, that you read about it, and you know the trial's going on, so you read about it every day, and then all of a sudden you're reading it, and you're like in the third paragraph, and you're like, they closed down an entire bridge. Like, you still can't believe it. You know,
right.
It's still
right.
You cannot.
I'm really floored, Alan, because you posited it that this was a possibility a long time ago.
I did,
and now you don't buy this.
Well, here's what I don't buy.
Are you walking it back?
No.
I think that the headline was very stark, but the article was murky. The facts were murky.
I agree with that.
That's what struck me. I read the headline and then I read the article, I thought the article was a lot more murky,
Alan's point,
I think is what Alan's saying.
I mean, absolutely right. I mean, this is just hearsay, right? I mean, we have absolutely nothing on this other than I heard somebody who may have said this to somebody else.
Yeah. Look, here's the thing about Andrew. I can tell you a few things about him. One of them is he doesn't play well in the sandbox with others. As a result of this, a lot of people don't like him. And as the walls come tumbling down here, people are willing to, you know, take anything as being
true,
the truth.
Possible.
Yeah. But on the other hand, we have to be very, very careful here. He strategically is a very smart man. And I don't think this is a guy who's going to get on the telephone and do something that is potentially illegal. I just don't.
I don't know. I think the story was very weak. I was disappointed when I saw the headline. I went, wow, and then read it and said, oh, it's not really there. But what does Wallstein get by lying about it? And doesn't it make sense that it really happened that way?
Well, he's now a client to the prosecutor. And he needs to do what the prosecutor wants done.
Why does the prosecutor want to implicate Cuomo?
I don't know. I don't know. But in
maybe
any
Alan Calieros knows the answer.
Right. Maybe.
All right. The other story that we want to get to in the time that we have is going back to the presidential race for a minute. We've been hearing for a couple of days now, for, well, I guess 2 weeks, that WikiLeaks was going to return and there would be an October surprise.
Yeah.
And Julian Assange saying at one point that it would be on Tuesday, which was yesterday. And then speaking of walking back, that kind of got walked back over the weekend. And then eventually, so now there's this article in The Washington Post that that perhaps the Trump team was played a bit and there really is nothing that is damaging that will that was promised to, quote unquote, end the Clinton campaign.
Wow, Julian Assange, what a jerk. He at one point was being considered for the cover of Time as Man of the Year when he thought of WikiLeaks and envisioned it the way we've actually seen leaks work, for example, the Panama Papers. Instead, he's become a joke. What little game is he playing? Oh, I've got something that's going to really change the whole election.
And he's sitting over there in Russia.
Not going to like it. And, oh, wait, I'm not going to tell it to you today. And the Trump people are rubbing their hands saying, this is it, get ready. This is going to blow Hillary out of the water. And then nothing. He goes, hey, WikiLeaks is 10 years old. Yay us. What a jerk.
And he's over there in Russia, right?
No, he's in the Ecuadorian embassy in London.
In London, right. I'm so sorry. I got them all mixed up.
Snowden.
I want to walk that back. nevertheless, the Russians clearly are in Trump's camp. In all of this.
I would say so. The government has not come out and said absolutely it was Russian hackers, but there are signs.
Yeah. So I think as we get to the end, we're coming to the end now, the October surprise, if there is to be one, does not have the potency. If they do it 5 days before or a week before, everybody's going to say, baloney.
Well, you know, as Teresa said, we've got weather coming up. He's now polluted. Anything that comes out now, aren't you going to be a little bit more skeptical about it because of this, like, show that he put on?
Yes.
So I don't know what he has. He says there's still a million documents, which, of course, it's all data. But he says he's still going to release them, and it's on the election process. I don't know. I mean, up to now, it was supposed to be something that was going to really be hurtful to Hillary Clinton. I think Trump got played. I hope so.
Okay. We'll go to some letters.
More letters.
Yes.
Daniel, his letter just struck me because of the topic line. Once again, Alan is right.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, once again. Yeah. Once again, that's good. That's
see, Daniel knows what he's doing.
How to get right.
What possible benefit would closing the bridge do for Cuomo? What? It really didn't help Christie. It was just revenge meant to cow his opponents. How that would ever help Cuomo is unexplainable. Rosemary, once again, is in far left field.
I'm just asking questions. I don't know what to make of it.
Fair enough. And we really don't know. There may be deals between Christie and Cuomo.
Yeah,
they may need each other on some kind of level. I'm just saying, as far as what these newspapers have been reporting about what somebody said that somebody else said, it doesn't go. It doesn't
it's
really
too
murky. Work. Yeah, doesn't work. Oh, more. You want more, don't you, Joe?
I do want more.
Okay. Let's see. Do your homework, says Andrew. It should be embarrassing to you all that you can't remember, let alone pronounce, the name of the moderator of last night's debate. Do your homework.
No, that's not true. On Facebook, I also referred to her as Elaine What's-Her-Name, and that's a editorial comment because
Elaine Quiano.
It was such a terrible performance that I don't think she did her career any good.
But don't you think that a letter like that, which we just read, comes out of what might be constitutionally called malice aforethought? So what? I mean, give me a break.
I will say one thing about, I did think for having the first Asian American hosting and moderating a debate was key. I also think the fact that she's head of a digital platform and also a reporter. But she had some great reporting, really good reporting for CBS when she did CBS. Was
a reporter with them. So, or is I'm sorry, with CNN. She was with CNN for a number of years.
Was I think she was a White House correspondent. But her questions, I agree with Rosemary, she had very good questions.
Yep.
They chose to pivot from them.
Yep.
But
That wasn't her fault.
And she also tried to...
No, it wasn't.
She had a whole series of questions. They were substantive questions, and they were important questions. And I think it reflects the candidates that they chose not to answer those questions. She probably could have held them accountable on a couple of those.
Here's one which I think is mistaken, but hey, we love your letters. this comes from Johanna, who says, Julian's methods... by Julian staging this ploy helps Hillary. If Hillary is elected, maybe she'll go soft on Julian. What? I don't see that.
He's not an American. So you're confusing it again. Snowden is the one who wants a pardon or a plea deal to come back. Assange is Australian, and he's fighting extradition from London to Sweden. It has nothing to do with Hillary.
And I think what we should be talking about is who broke into the DNC's databases. You know, is there a compromise? Right. This is an electronic Watergate. Is there a compromise of our electoral, the election process?
Exactly.
Those are the conversations that we should be having, because those are very real. They've actually happened, and we need to have a better understanding of those.
All right, we are out of time.
Oh,
but I want to thank everybody. Thanks to Alan and to Rosemary and Teresa. Thank you all. We will be back tomorrow, and we'll obviously be talking about many, many more things tomorrow. We look forward to that. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.